This morning is United States against Ning Wen. Mr. Geitz.
May it please the court. Attorneys. The sole issue in this case concerns the propriety of the government using FISA as the tool to do the search as opposed to using the traditional Title III searches. Because of the nature of the situation, that being that the facts are classified and not available to me, there are really only one of the FISA requirements that I can speak to, and that is the significant purpose requirement, because those facts get developed in the course of the trial. And so they become disclosed. And as far as them being available to the FISA court and to the magistrate and to the district court, the magistrate's opinion indicates that he did rely upon the investigative history and scenario of this case, which is not to say that concede that the rest of the requirements of FISA are met in this case, only to say that it is impossible for me to address them except to tell you our story or our point of view. And on one of those, before I get into the significant purpose argument, my client is adamant asking me to ask you for a further review of the fact that he was an agent of a foreign country in this case.
Counsel, let me tell you my principal problem when I read these papers. I can't understand why the arguments you are making matter. A warrant was, in fact, issued. And under the Fourth Amendment, that ought to be enough. The fact that it was issued by one court rather than another court, by a district judge wearing his FISA hat rather than a district judge wearing his district judge hat, doesn't seem to matter for purposes of the Fourth Amendment. So what is the significance of this, of which hat the federal district judge was wearing when he issued the warrant?
Well, I think there is a difference, because the FISA warrant really does not comply with Fourth Amendment. A lot of my brief is directed towards that, and I would say that the biggest...
What's the shortcoming?
The biggest shortcoming is...
Potential lack of probable cause?
No, I would say particularity, that the FISA statute gives the
government... How is this any less particular than a warrant issued under the Omnibus Crime Control and Safe Streets Act? It just says intercept conversations to and from the following numbers.
Well, I think the FISA warrant is as broad as it could possibly be. The Fourth Amendment, I would think, would lean towards the other side of this to...
No. Can you answer my question? Is this any less particular than an intercept warrant issued under the Omnibus Crime Control and Safe Streets Act, that is, the standard wiretapping warrant?
I don't know for sure, but I would think the duration probably is longer, but perhaps not. I don't know exactly the answer to that. But I don't know that the government could have gotten a warrant for a wiretap in this case with what they had. And the government has never taken that position in this litigation. They've always said that it was justified under FISA.
But FISA does have a probable cause requirement.
FISA does have a probable cause requirement.
That but probable cause requirement was satisfied here after, albeit an in-camera inspection.
Well, the probable cause, I think, probably would be the least of the problems here. But as far as the particularity and notice are concerned, there really is a difference between...
There's nothing in the Fourth Amendment about notice, right? Fourth Amendment says you have to have a warrant based on probable cause and particularly describing the persons or places, etc., and it has to be based on oath or affirmation. Those are the three requirements: probable cause, particular description, oath or affirmation. Is there any doubt? Well, you say you're not disputing probable cause. You are disputing particularity, but that's not clear to me in what way this is a shortfall. Is there any doubt about the oath or affirmation requirement?
Well, there was an oath and affirmation in the FISA application, I presume. I haven't seen it. I think the statute requires it, and I presume that, technically speaking, that it was complied with. I think another difference is that if this was under Title III, we wouldn't have this classified information, we'd be able to be in a position to challenge it. I mean, this is the most onerous of invasion that there possibly could be. It would seem to me that it has to comply with all the requirements of FISA. And if the government could have come in, I don't know when
That's what I don't understand. You see, that's the whole point of your brief, and it's the reason why I'm asking this question. What you seem to be saying is that the exclusionary rule should be applied if the government chose the wrong statute or it didn't properly carry out this statute, even if all of the requirements of the Fourth Amendment have been complied with. And that's not my understanding of the exclusionary rule. We don't use it to enforce errors in choosing which court to get your warrant from.
But the whole process puts my client in a position where I can't say whether the...
No, I certainly understand the difficulties you're facing when classified information is used. Actually, classified information could be used under Title III of the Omnibus Crime Control and Safe Streets Act, too. And if the government doesn't go out of its way to help those people, classified information can be used in almost any case. And it does put people behind the eight ball. You have to rely on in-camera inspections. But the fundamental point of the question I'm asking is, why would an error in choosing which statute to use lead to the use of the exclusionary rule? Because that's the remedy you're seeking.
That's the remedy I am seeking. There's no doubt about that. I think the answer, maybe we can find an unsealed case where they really do question whether or not that the FISA warrant is the same as a warrant under the Fourth Amendment and point out deficiencies of it. And I think that I've addressed all the factors in my brief as to how this would fail under the Fourth Amendment. And so on the basis of that, I think that there is a distinction. Otherwise, there's almost no point to FISA if the government can just come in under the normal procedures and do a search and wiretap of people's telephones and faxes and emails. Why does it have to come under FISA, which is the special needs kind of legislation? There must be some difference. So I think that the answer to your question, and I do think it's addressed in my brief, is that it's not the same as a Fourth Amendment warrant. And
now I'm lost. What does it lack that the Fourth Amendment requires? You know, as I say, I think there are three things: probable cause, oath or affirmation, and particular description. That's what the Fourth Amendment requires. What's missing here? I think you're saying particular description.
Well, I think particular description is the thing that first comes to my mind. But I think
there was a time, by the way, when the kind of argument you're making was actually made about Title III. Telford Taylor, no less, made the argument. The Supreme Court rejected it in Dahlia and said an intercept order under Title III is indeed a warrant for purposes of the Fourth Amendment. Now, given the holding of Dahlia that a Title III intercept order is a warrant, why would this not be a warrant?
Well, I'm not even sure that it requires the same probable cause requirement as the Fourth Amendment does. I mean, that being FISA, being it, that that there's a difference in the probable cause.
You mean there's something, there are degrees of probable cause? Or is probable cause just the ground floor? Probable cause is probable cause. What would you add to that? A lot of probable cause? Or
no.
Not as much probable cause?
I would think that probable cause that a crime, a particular crime is being committed, and particularity as to what to search for is part of the warrant.
But probable cause is its own definition. It ultimately becomes a subjective discussion.
And in the FISA, what are we talking? We're talking probable cause that foreign intelligence information
depends what you're looking for. Probable cause of for what? Of what?
Of what?
But that isn't attacking the probable cause. It's just attacking, is there sufficient evidence to say, for a finder of fact, say that a judicial officer, say there's probable cause to do what you did. Or to do what you want to do.
Probable cause that we're looking for foreign intelligence information, I suppose, is what FISA would require.
Well.
And then that then goes in to the main argument that I have in this case, that the facts that end up getting developed in the trial pretty clearly show us that the government invoked FISA at a time when they wanted to investigate a export violation case.
You're in your rebuttal time, so I'll shut up.
Oh, okay. I might too. Thank you.
Mr. Drennan.
Good morning, Your Honors. John Drennan for the United States. I work for the Department of Justice. I have with me AUSA Erica O'Neill, who was the trial lawyer below, and is probably more conversant with the facts than I am. Let me begin by saying that these are complicated questions. I'll do my best to answer the court's queries, but most of these issues were not fully briefed, and this might be a reason to decide this case on its facts. With respect to the facts, I'll just ask Your Honor, to look at Exhibit 4 of the submitted the FISA materials, particularly pages 2 through 5. I think this will just review of that would largely undermine the factual assertions that I find in Mr. Wen's brief. Now, with respect to his argument, as I understand it, he's arguing that the FISA order here was not a Fourth Amendment warrant because it lacks particularity. With regard to particularity, the FISA court finds for U.S. persons that the high-level executive branch officer certifying the FISA warrant has not acted in a way that's or certified in a way that's not clearly erroneous. Here, it's clear that the particularity requirement of the Fourth Amendment has been met in Berger against New York and United States against Donovan. The requirements for the Fourth Amendment particularity in the electronic surveillance context are simply that the telephone line to be tapped is specified and that the type of information sought will be specified also. Both of those are certified here. It's foreign intelligence information that was certified. It's right in the statute. And I just ask Your Honors to inspect the materials for the rest. There does seem to be some question about probable cause. Your Honor suggested perhaps it was probable cause to show something different than under Title III. We would submit that for U.S. persons, there's a vanishingly small difference between Title III and the FISA. The probable cause is that the court must find is under 1805, subsection 1805A3. The court finds that the target here of the surveillance is an agent of a foreign power in this case. Agent of a foreign power is defined in 1801.
Certainly some important differences, right? Under the Wiretapping Act, the defendant gets a notice after a period of time.
There is a difference in notice.
FISA is not designed exactly to alert foreign operatives that they're being watched.
Yes, Congress has done a detailed balancing.
I'm not debating whether there are good reasons for FISA or not, but it doesn't seem to me that one should say it's all just the same as Title III.
Well,
there are important differences, but they may not be differences that matter to the things that are in the Fourth Amendment.
They're not absolute differences either. Again, in 1806, subsection 1806, the district court is entitled, when necessary to find the accuracy of the information, to provide the information to the target of surveillance. So disclosure can happen. And in 1804, subsection 1804D, the district court is entitled to ask the government for more information. So there are differences, but in particular cases, those could be changed or altered. So in this case, we were just directing Your Honor's attention to the definition of foreign agent of a foreign power, which again is defined in a very small subset of crimes. Now, with respect to those crimes, which are international terrorism, sabotage, clandestine activities, I don't mean to suggest that. There's another term floating around here in the defendant's brief and in the Fifth Court of Review in Ray Sealed Case. They use the term non-foreign intelligence crime or foreign intelligence crime. That's a different term. It's not statutorily defined. And the standard there, again, this is a term that's used to analyze the statute. It's not part of the statute. It seems to be opposed to what they call ordinary crime. So this is crime that involves a foreign power or the malevolent activity of a foreign power. There, the standard is wholly unrelated to the malevolent actions of a foreign power. At least that's the standard that In Re Sealed Case uses. It's a term that is not part of the statute. Unless there are other questions.
Well, I thought it was the procedure here is somewhat odd where an Article III judge issues a warrant under FISA, and we have this cumbersome procedure where a magistrate conducts an in-camera inspection of that and then makes a report or recommendation to another district judge on how to handle it. Why, in a FISA case, even go to a district judge, to a magistrate judge first for a report and recommendation?
Well, the FISA court, by statute, is comprised of district court judges specifically assigned by the Chief Judge of the Supreme Court.
They're Article III judges.
Right. So that's why you go to the FISA judges in the first instance.
I understand that. But I'm talking about when there's an objection at trial, a criminal indictment's been returned, why involve a magistrate to make the initial determination as part of a report and recommendation to another district judge as to whether the FISA Article III judge followed the law?
Well, in this case, the district court judge, in his opinion, indicates that that's a matter of local practice.
I'm just saying why. It seems like sort of a...
That may be a question I'm going to have to... refer to trial counsel, but it does seem to be a matter of local practice, and it's certainly not nationwide practice. Apparently it's just a matter of local practice. We're not claiming that the standard of review varies from the FISA court to the magistrate judge to the district court judge. In this circuit, it's clear that they all need to find the same thing, so there's no difference. But we do have here three independent determinations and reviews of the record, all of which have found essentially the same facts, and that the challenge to the FISA warrants here was not well taken. Are there other questions? If there are not, I'll cede the balance of my time to the court.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, Mr. Jenner. Anything further, Mr. Geis?
To address your basic question, as far as the difference between FISA and the Fourth Amendment requirements, and going back and looking at my brief, I have cited some law where notice is a requirement of the Fourth Amendment. And and more important even, I think, the notice of the difference is the deference that the court gives to the government under FISA as opposed to a traditional search, and that being that they have to accept the authorizations and the statements of the government unless they're clearly erroneous, and, of course, that would not be the standard in a typical Fourth Amendment search. So I think that there are differences, and that's the reason that we have FISA in the first place, is to carve out an exception to the Fourth Amendment requirements, and that it was abused in this case, as I state and point out in my brief, by being used to investigate a traditional crime that could have been under the Fourth Amendment. And one other point briefly is that at the time that the garbage search occurred in this case, I don't know if that was before or after FISA was authorized, because I don't know when FISA was authorized. It was in the same month, I think, April of 04. But that probably was when the government would have had probable cause under the traditional Fourth Amendment, at least as to Mrs. Wynn.
I don't know what the traditional Fourth Amendment is.
The Fourth Amendment.
Just one, 1791.
As opposed to FISA, which I consider to be an exception to the Fourth Amendment. So traditional is a bad choice of words. But so I'm not sure at the time that they went to FISA that they did have probable cause, that they could have gone to the district court and gotten a search warrant. Normal as opposed to traditional. Thank you, Your Honors. Unless you have questions, I have nothing further.
Mm-hmm. Okay, thank you very much. The case is taken under advisement.